The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Apologetics Canada Podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Terry Crosby.
I don't know about you guys out there, but I've just been really getting tired of all of the negativity on social media and all the outrage.
It's toxic, Steve.
Yeah.
This is like the first time in my life that I've gone on hiatus, man. For the last couple of days, I have not really been on Facebook or the news. I haven't been checking anything.
Yeah, I'm just
going to... the best of my ability. It still sneaks in there.
Yeah, I think I'm going to tune out for a little while, too. Although I'm usually on there to look for stuff that we can talk about on podcasts, but man, I just...
My soul's been heavy, man. It's just like, it's depressing.
I'm still drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah? You're in it?
I'm still parking myself in front of that news feed. I'm sorry, but I know, it is getting a little heavy.
And so it doesn't bother you, man. You're just taking it in.
Well, yeah, I think it is. I'm still just going for it, but... maybe I should take a little hiatus.
You know, it's kind of weird because Terry's got cutting marks all over his arms and his deep bags under his eyes, but apparently it's not affecting him at all.
It's not. I'm fine.
Twitching lately, but that's all right. Okay. Yeah, it doesn't seem to be bothering Terry.
So we are going to talk about some of this stuff today, but before we get started, just to lift our spirits, Terry has prepared a little something for us.
You prepared something for
it? Well, I found it in the newsfeed. I was looking at. But yeah, no, there's a couple of interesting articles here that I came across. First one being a 74-year-old man accused of getting his entire church high on weed cookies.
No way.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
What is this, in Denver?
Portland.
That was my second choice.
That explains a lot, actually.
He's accused of lacing the cookies with THC. Several congregants aged 12 to 70 ended up in local emergency room.
They had the best church service of their life.
Oh, yeah. They felt free.
Wow.
They were complaining of adverse effects from the cookies.
Wow.
They said these tasted unusually salty.
I got to know, does it say what church this happened in?
No, it doesn't.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
His name was Mr. Jones, though.
His name was not Mr. Jones. Is this on the Babylon Bee?
No. Okay, one other here. This will affect all the guys out there. Nation's bacon reserves hit a 50-year low as prices rise.
No.
Can you hear the screams out there?
It's funny you say that because I had bacon last night and it was delicious. Can I just give a shout out to bacon? This is going to change some men's lives right now. Okay, so now you need to tune in and listen carefully because many people have been cooking bacon the wrong way. Okay, first of all, do not microwave it. Men,
no.
Don't do it.
What?
Secondly, don't fry it in a pan. Don't do it.
What?
I know. See, I'm going to change your lives right now. Are you ready for this?
I'm not going to change. You
put it on like a cookie sheet or some sort of pan and you bake it in the oven.
I can see that. Yeah,
I've done that before. Yeah.
It was like a whole new world of bacon had opened up to me. It was like I had gone into the inner chamber of the bacon kingdom. And that's where you experience bacon in all of its
fullness. Have you tried the barbecue?
Whoa.
Hey?
Whoa, you can barbecue bacon? That just sounds like a reason for my barbecue to light on fire.
Boom. Yeah. That's where it goes. Boom.
Yeah.
Well, have you done that? You barbecued bacon?
Just once.
And was it amazing?
It was pretty good. Yeah. It catches fire quickly.
I had a feeling.
Yeah. All right. Might want to put it on a cookie sheet in there, too.
Let's move
Steve
on here,
Steve wants
then.
To move us along. Yeah. I appreciate what? That, Steve.
Today's topic is the travel ban. Donald Trump, on January 27th of this year, signed an executive order barring entry from some Muslim-majority countries. So it puts a 120-day travel ban on seven Muslim-majority countries, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Somalia, Sudan, Libya, and Yemen. And out of those, especially Syria is on suspension indefinitely. Because of this, though, the media just exploded. There's lots of outrage. And what's most conspicuous to me is the phrase Muslim ban. And this is especially aggravated by the fact that Donald Trump has mentioned that he is going to actually give preference to Christians coming from those countries. And so people are saying, you know, this is religious discrimination. This is a Muslim ban and things like that. So what were your reactions when you heard about this?
You know, and on the one hand, you can't help but feel like, you know, Trump is a bull in a china shop, right? He's just getting in there, shaking things up. And, you know, there's a lot of people that feel like he's moving really quick on things, that he's not being very thoughtful, you know. And so you get a variety of different opinions by different people and how they feel about it. If I were to say, how do I feel about it? Well, I have a bunch, like everyone, I got a bunch of mixed emotions about the whole thing, you know. It feels like we're watching something from a distance, trying to understand what we're watching and trying our best to understand why policies are being put in place that they are. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess for me, I was just like, he kind of is deserved all the backlash that is happening, because his rhetoric on the campaign trail itself was even worse than this, right? It was talking more specific about Muslims. But that was my first reaction. I mean, there were so many protests, and the amount of people that are protesting was just crazy.
I guess the part of me that gets frustrated is for whenever – this is just me speaking, okay? I'll just give you a little piece of the Andy frustration. You often hear about Christians being martyred, persecuted – in all sorts of ways. And I haven't seen anybody, any liberals, you know, or people frustrated, they're out protesting about all that's taking place. It's really interesting to me how one-sided that feels, you know, as being a Christian and constantly seeing Christians marginalized. It almost feels like it doesn't matter what Trump does, people are going to be upset. But I can appreciate, though, why people are upset about what's happened. I mean, come on. I mean, there's people that were abroad that now can't come back, there's people stuck. There's people whose visas were accepted and now, you know, they're not being. I mean, you could only imagine how frustrated people would be.
I think people from all sides, though, if there's one thing that people agree on, is that this was poorly executed.
That's right. Yeah.
And this happened way too suddenly, and the officials didn't really know. Poor communications. So the officials didn't know what was happening. And so we have situations where, you know, green card holders can't come into the country. And so then Trump orders a reversal on Sunday. Okay, you know, let those people in and things like that. So it wasn't very well thought through from the beginning.
Right.
And so there was also a story of, say, a five-year-old kid who got separated because of this from his family, and he was detained at the airport, and this kid doesn't even speak English. And can you imagine the horror and terror that this kid must have felt, right? So there's a lot of really terrible stuff happening. And some people are even saying, well, some Christians that can't come into the country and had to go back to where they came from, now their lives are in danger. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of stuff that happened. You're exactly right. The way you described it, Andy, like a bull in a china shop. That's exactly how I felt watching this whole thing unfold.
I don't think there's any real great transition way to do that.
Oh, by the way, could I just say something here just to jump in so that people understand what I'm saying? So I think that, you know, when stuff like that happens, I don't think it's a good thing. In the same way that I think when it happens to Christians or other people, it's not a good thing, or whether it be Hindu or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, just because somebody is a Muslim, I mean, doesn't mean that they should be banned from coming into the United States or into Canada or whatever.
Well, absolutely not, right? I think we all agree on that.
We all agree on that. And so I just wanted to make that really clear to people that are listening, that where I'm getting at is that this is – that it's messy. Mm-hmm. And that oftentimes I feel that when you – that it's not equally I'm finding right now that it's very one-sided on the liberal side, and particularly towards Muslims. And even in the midst of all this, even though it is affecting Christians too, you're still not hearing anything about how this is affecting a Christian that is in one of these seven countries. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's you know, labeled as this Muslim ban, but Christians are being banned from coming too. But apparently, this is something, though, that is frustrating people, is that it sounds like there's going to be preference given to Christians from these countries to come in.
I mean, Trump's explanation on why it happened so fast is because if he didn't, a lot of the bad guys, he calls bad guys, would flood in, you know, if they did it over a period of time. And I don't know. That kind of makes sense in a way. But I mean, I am not a Trump supporter. I'm not trying to.
No,
I'm just saying that the way, you know, any way you do it here, I mean, not any way, but the way he did it, it's going to be difficult in a lot of respects.
I don't think we're trying to take anybody's side here necessarily, but we're trying to offer a critique of what's happening from our perspective, right? From this side of the border.
Well, and isn't it more than that too, though? Because I'm going to guess now that maybe it's me being, you know, overly charitable, but I'm going to guess that Trump isn't sitting around thinking to himself, you know what, I might as well ban, you know, everyone from seven countries coming in. I'm hoping, right, that he's in communication with the security department, with, you know, the CIA or whatever it is, you know, as they're thinking about national security in the decisions that are being made. Now, maybe I'm being overly optimistic there.
Well, I think that's people's fears that he's just a one-man show.
Yeah, I
right?
guess
he's,
I guess
he's not getting information from other departments, and he's, you know, his
and
relationship
that could, and that could be the case.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
but you're on the outside, right?
Right. I feel like I'm actually very much on the same track. I'm just what I'm observing is that people tend to have an idea of what Donald Trump is like based on his campaign rhetoric and all of that. And then this massive confirmation bias comes in. So whatever they see, now they will interpret through the grid of what they saw during the campaign.
Right.
And in a lot of ways, you're right, Terry, like Donald Trump, he deserves this. Like he earned it. He did this to himself. He made enemies of certain segments of the society while gaining support from others. And then he made enemies
with the
media. Well,
and he's got this media war going on. And this is the reason why I don't like watching the news right now. Or reading the news right now is because of this media war, and it is so one-sided all over the place that it's annoying. And it actually is making it really difficult to read the news, and I think a lot of us have just flat-out lost all trust in the media.
The other thing I thought was 90 days. That's not a long time.
90 days, 120 days.
So if they want to streamline this vetting process— mm-hmm. That seems like such a short time to really, you know, I don't know the process, but, you know, like it's not a lot of time anyway.
We should get into that though.
So let's talk a little bit about that. Is this a Muslim ban? Well, I think, like I said earlier, we all agree that this was poorly executed, but I think one thing that it's not is a Muslim ban, just like Andy mentioned earlier, it's not just Muslims that can't come into the country. It's anybody and everybody from these seven countries that are mentioned, right? Christians and Yazidis and whatnot. And there are just seven countries out of tens of Muslim majority countries. So other Muslim countries, the border's open for them, right? So this is not a Muslim ban, because if this were a Muslim ban, then Trump would have to ban them from coming into the country too.
See, this is where I think that this issue is so much messier than the media and a lot of people want to give it. And that is that we're not dealing with an immigration issue. We're dealing with a terrorism/war issue. This is the challenge. There are people in these countries that are incredibly violent, that have grown up in violence, and that want to do violence. And somehow countries, it's not just the United States, because Britain has already expressed their frustration with this and trying to secure their borders. Somehow you've got to deal with that. How do you weed out the bad from the good? And I mean, this is an unprecedented challenge, because I know a lot of people want to draw parallels to the mass immigration that has taken place in both the United States and Canada in the past. But they weren't dealing with mass immigrations with a mix of people that wanted to kill you and those who didn't want to kill you.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in why he picked those seven countries.
According
to the statistics and the numbers, there's a lot more terrorists that could come out of Afghanistan, say.
Or Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia.
Actually, the thing though is that Donald Trump didn't pick these countries. It was the Obama administration that picked
these
seven
countries.
Yeah,
that's where they're deferring it to.
Yeah.
Because of their visa
And these countries are actually these are the really war-torn countries, and they know that there are terrorist training camps in these areas. And that's one of the reasons why the Obama administration flagged these countries as countries of concern. Well, and then the Trump administration just took the baton and...
Well, this is one of the things, though, that has frustrated me. I have talked with Syrian refugees, Christian Syrian refugees, and one of the things that we've heard from them is this confusion over how they're deciding who gets to come in. Because the thing that we've heard repeatedly is a lot of the refugees are coming from the rebel areas. It's not like they're going to the good parts of Syria and saying, okay, you know, who wants to come in? They're going into the rebel parts, into the parts in which you've got a lot of the extremists or a lot of the terrorists or a lot of those who participated in that. And that's where they're drawing them from. And so you can already tell that there's not a good vetting process in place as it is.
Also, what I've saw, like just kind of going back quickly to speaking of Christians, a lot of people are concerned about, you know, Trump mentioning some preference given to Christians, especially. Some Christian leaders have spoken out against that mm-hmm. this is not a good thing.
A lot.
Yeah. I think what's being missed here is that according to the immigration policy and refugee policy down in the States, you're actually supposed to give special consideration to those people groups that are being persecuted in those countries as religious minorities. And so Christians being the religious minorities in these countries, they're supposed to be given special consideration. But during the Obama administration, actually, Christians were really underrepresented. Even though Christians make up 10% of Syria's population, something like 0.5% of the refugees that came into the U.S. were actually
Christian.
Can
we just give some numbers there? Of the 13,210 Syrian refugees that the Obama administration let in mm-hmm. 2016, of those, 13,100 were Muslims, 12,966 were Sunnis, 24 were Shia, 110 other Muslims, and 77 were Christians.
Yeah, that's way underrepresented.
Well, and what that also represents is like when we interviewed Summer that was here, she would have said that. She did say that. She goes, I was there. I saw who was getting refugee status and who wasn't. And I can tell you it wasn't the Christians.
I think one thing we have to make sure that we understand is that this is the law, right? By force of law, you have to give special consideration to people groups that are being persecuted as religious minorities. What that means is that if religious persecution were to break out, say, in Korea, right, and Muslims are being persecuted for being Muslim, then they would receive special consideration coming in from Korea to the United States or Canada. Well, I guess we're talking about the United States right now. So when they're coming into the United States, they would be given special consideration. So this is not just about giving special consideration to the people group that you like or don't like. That's not what it's about. So let's. I want to move on from here, and we want to talk a little bit. I really want to park on this. What should be our response to this refugee crisis as Christians? I mean, we've talked about it briefly before, but I think in the past episodes, but I think a lot has happened since. So what do you guys think?
First of all, I think that we've got a couple things that we need to have clear in our minds. And so let's start with the first one that's got to be clear in our minds. And I think this is the challenging one. And that is, as Christians, we love people. We've been called to love all people because God loves all people, and all people have been made in the image of God. That includes people from these seven countries, and we are called to care for them. And so I think that's a real challenge, because we've got this challenge that's happening where we are called to love Muslims. We're not called to love Islam. And that's a difficult thing. How do you balance those two, where you're loving the person, but you've also got these ideologies in place that are very challenging ideologies? So this leads into the second thing. Yes, you love people, but you don't love them blindly and ignorantly. This is the part that frustrates me about political correctness. Just last night, I was talking with a young person who said that she met a Muslim that works with her and is a very devout Muslim, and was putting on a presentation talking about how that she heard about how Islam is a religion of peace. And so we'll often hear that. And a lot of people then will get confused. Oh, I hear that Islam is a religion of peace. And but then they don't understand ISIS because ISIS makes no sense, right? And it's like, no, you can't be so ignorant. You have to understand what Islam actually teaches and why there is confusion over how you can have really peaceful, lovely Muslims and how you can have incredibly violent, hostile Muslims that want to kill you. Why do you have that? Well, you got to roll up your sleeves and do the hard work of understanding what's happening there and not get caught into the sway of political correctness.
I would just maybe add one more point to your two points that I really agree with is, what is the responsibility of the government?
Right. So the role of the state,
the role of
versus
the state.
The role of the church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In protecting us and in protecting and giving us safety within our country, right? So that comes up for me that really is kind of a poignant, I guess.
Yeah, I think in the wake of all of this happening, a lot of secularists are criticizing Christians, especially citing Leviticus chapter 19, verses 33 and 34, where it says here, "When a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God." So the criticism is that we Christians really, you know, we give lip service to the Bible being the word of God, but we don't really take it seriously.
See, that's why I was making the point earlier that this isn't just an immigration issue. If this was an immigration issue, that we wouldn't have an issue, right? This is a war issue. You have a people in a religion that have a war with us. Do you know what I'm saying? So,
yep.
So now what you have is not some sojourner, you know, it's not some foreigner coming through, sojourner. You've got a war on your hands, and it's just like any war. Some are fighting in this war and some aren't. Some are civilians in this thing. And you're trying to figure – this is the problem with all wars. You're trying to figure out who's who. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the real challenge that we find ourselves in with immigration that's taking place in these countries. Now, the other thing that we've seen is in Europe, they haven't been doing a good job vetting this thing. And they've got a real mess on their hands right now.
Yeah, especially Sweden. They're – second or third largest city, I think third largest city, Malmö. Some communities there are 80% refugees and immigrants and whatnot. And they're having a really hard time integrating into the society. And crime is just out of control there, so much so that the police in Malmö, they're saying, yeah, we really can't handle this. They're admitting that things are getting out of control, that they can't.
But I mean, that shouldn't surprise you. I mean, you've got people coming from war-torn areas, right? I mean, there's going to be challenges there. I mean, these are people that have experienced horrendous challenges, right? And again, they're coming with that baggage. Not that that's a bad thing. I mean, we're there to help people, but you've got a mix in there of those that are for you and those that are against you, and how do you
and further, just to add quickly before you speak, Terry, just to add to that too, going from one culture to another is a huge task, and I say that from experience, right? It took me how many years to actually learn the way things work in Canada. And I had to leave a lot of – like I had to unlearn a lot of things that I just took for granted growing up in Korea, mm-hmm. right? And I didn't even know how things really worked in terms of, you know, getting jobs or, you know, anything like that. And so it's not just the – you know, we're not saying, well, immigrants, you know, like they're bad people. I'm not saying that. It is a real challenge. The struggle is real, they say, right? It's a real struggle to adapt to a new culture. And from what I understand, especially many Muslims have a very strong pride in their own culture. In disciplines like linguistics, we talk about high culture ego as opposed to low culture ego. People with high culture egos tend to have a really tough time adapting to the new environment.
And that's Christian and non alike. Mm. I mean, as we've talked with Christian and non-Christian refugees, it's challenging.
Just quickly, was there something that you wanted to say, Terry?
I guess I'm going to come back to that tension of the government keeping us safe and what is, as Christians, what are we to do? It was just interesting to hear, it was Franklin Graham speak about this, because I think he really kind of took this. Well, he kind of a Trump supporter, I think, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but let's say he is.
Yeah, but one of his quotes was, "It's not a biblical command for the country to let everyone in who wants to come. That's not a biblical issue." Right. And right at the end of the quote, he says, because of the dangers we see today in this world, we need to be very careful. So he's really coming back to this issue of safety. And I see the safety issue within the country and for Christians is huge. It's almost become a Christian virtue. There's a lot of fear out there.
Yeah. Well, I completely agree. We got to balance those two. But I mean, you can't meet heaven on earth. Right. You know, the reality is life's going to be dangerous and it's going to have its challenges, and loving people is messy. That's why I think that tension has to take place. So let me be really clear about this. Christians have and will continue to fight for the rights of human beings, and that human beings are valuable and need to be cared for and loved because they're made in the image of God. And this includes all people, even those people that are in Muslim countries, right? We need to care for them, and we need to do so wisely. And so I want to see us continuing to helping these people and to loving them wisely. The thing, though, that is the challenge is when we see how naive people are to what's going on around the world. Now, this was, I thought, really interesting, and we'll post this on the show notes. But there's an interview that took place in the UK.
That was Katie Hopkins?
Yeah, with Katie Hopkins. It was quite fascinating. A Muslim calls her up and is talking to her about the frustration of people not being able to immigrate into the U.S. and other places. And she asks him this question. She says, do you not find it a little bit odd or interesting that all of these Muslims, people from all these Muslim countries are trying to immigrate into Christian nations? And he actually was very honest with her. And he said, well, yeah, he goes, if I'm honest, he goes, we have some serious issues in our Muslim countries. He said, there's a lot of fighting, infighting, where Muslims are fighting Muslims as well. It's not just Muslims fighting Christians, Shia fighting Sunni. And so I thought that was really interesting.
Because what's going to happen is as you bring massive numbers of people into your country, not only are you going to have, people trouble having people integrate into your society, but you're also going to bring all of their other baggage to their infighting onto your shores.
And one of the things that a lot of people are really ignorant of is they don't realize the kind of stuff that's going on in these countries. They don't realize that in these countries, if you write on a piece of paper, like paperwork, you have to declare whether or not you're a Muslim or Christian. And if you declare that you're a Christian, university is going to cost you more money. Your health insurance is going to cost you more. These are the kind of ideologies that you often find in Islam and that you're dealing with. So you're dealing with some serious challenges. You're dealing with one religion, Christianity, that values human life, mm-hmm. and that sees all people as equal. And you're dealing with another religion that it does not do that. It does not value all people equally. And this is the part that I just want to be non-politically correct for a moment. Islam is not a religion of peace. And hearing this and hearing people talk about that drives me crazy. I've met a number of Muslims that are peaceful, but when you get into Islam itself, it never has been. People aren't making this stuff up when they, for example, kill people that make fun of Muhammad. That's what Muhammad did. It's recorded in their own writings that this is what would take place.
I think that's probably one of the most significant challenges that we have in our society, and I mentioned this a number of times, is we seem to have a hard time separating the ideology from the person. And just like you mentioned, you mentioned over and over again that a lot of Muslims are peaceful.
Yeah.
Right.
And thankfully.
And I think often that gets lost in the sort of our politically correct sensitivities that we hear. For example, we hear you say Islam is not a religion of peace. All of a sudden, we forget that you just said to us that actually many Muslims are loving and peaceful. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I think I can't emphasize it enough.
Oh, I know, because here's the thing. I've spoken on this issue so many times in churches, and it's so difficult because I'll talk about Islam, and all it does is build fear and resentment against Muslims. And it's like, And I'm like, I'm at a loss as to what to do. How do I help inspire you to love and to care for and to reach out to your Muslims, not to be afraid, but to be honest about what Islam actually teaches and what it is as a religion?
And we're not saying, you know, you should confront your Muslim neighbors and deride their religion. No, that's not at all what we're advocating for. But we're saying, know what Islam is. And also recognizing that your Muslim neighbor most likely is a very peaceful person that you can hang out with. And
let me just explain that real quickly, because I find a lot of people aren't clear on Islam. Islam has more than just the Quran that is part of its teaching. The Quran is sayings from Muhammad that he supposedly received. And for this reason, the Quran says very little about Muhammad. In fact, only mentions him by name four times. And so if you want to know, and so the Muslim ideal in Islam is to be like Muhammad. So guess what? If you want to know what Muhammad is like, you're not going to find it in the Quran. You have to go outside of the Quran. This is why you'll have a different in Muslim, where you'll have one Muslim that's peaceful. They may just be reading the Quran. But then you've got other Muslims that are reading the other works, like the Hadith or the Life of Muhammad. It's in these other works that you'll get Sharia law and all these other things. Mm. That's where this stuff starts to go, oh, that's why I get one Muslim, and he may be like, yeah, Islam's a religion of peace, and they're confused why this other stuff's going on. And you're like, well, yeah, but see, these other Muslims are reading these other works. And so this is the challenge. So I would encourage people that want to know more about this and not get it into the whole political correctness, read the whole breadth of what's being taught and not just this one segment.
Yeah, I've been really encouraged just with a lot of the dialogue that has been going on in our culture. I mean, I have a one page pulled up in front of me by J. Dudley Woodberry, total dialogue with another Muslim, right? Like, really, really good things. I've seen videos happening, you know, very, very good that you start some kind of conversation.
Yes. So we would encourage you to start your conversation somewhere. Don't be afraid. Get to know your Muslim neighbor and love him.
Love her.
Yeah. Yep. And that's where we should start.
We need to continue to be advocates for human beings.
Yes.
Period.
Okay.
Agree.
All right. Well, let's wrap up there. Thank you for joining us. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada. I think we've kicked this horse enough, right? The American politics. So we're going to come back probably with some other things to think about. We'll see you guys next week.